This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. It's been almost two decades since The Bachelor and The Bachelorette debuted on ABC. The franchises can be sappy and sentimental and formulaic, but they kind of created a new market for dating reality TV shows. They're still entertaining the masses on a basic premise, the quest for love. Almost exclusively heterosexual love. Now, many people argue that shows like this often hinge on preconceived notions of gender, that they reinforce what mainstream culture already tells us a relationship is supposed to look like. One show is flipping that script, MTV's latest season of the dating show, Are You the One? 16 contestants who identify as sexually fluid are vying to find their perfect matches. What's the value of representing the underrepresented in reality TV? And can we trust TV networks not to exploit those it claims to champion? Joining us from LA is Kai West, one of the contestants from this season of MTV's Are You the One? Kai, welcome to 1A.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Can we start, Kai, with a little bit about you? How do you identify as it relates to your sexual orientation and your gender identity?
So I specifically identify in my gender as transmasculine non-binary, which means I was born female at birth and I have chosen to medically transition, but I don't prescribe to exclusively male or female. And then in terms of my orientation, I like to use the word queer, which is kind of an all-encompassing sexually fluid identity.
It is also worth noting, and I would not bring this up, but for the fact that it is visible on the show, but it is worth noting that you've had what's often referred to as top surgery. So your chest is a little flatter, kind of looking a little bit more like a man's chest.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had top surgery, and I also have been on and off of testosterone, which has lowered my voice and masculinized my appearance.
That's something that came up in the first episode of this season. Here is a clip where Jenna, another contestant, offers her support for you while you are taking a testosterone shot. Listen.
Mine hasn't been very linear. Like, I was, like, on testosterone for about, like, 4 to 5 months, and then I got off of it for a couple months.
Because I was a little bit scared and also just like feeling it out. Like, my identity is not like linear, like male to female. And so, like, that's me unpacking, like, how masculine, like, do I want to become?
There's no guidebook to this. I mean, there are literally books on relationships for heterosexual people of, like, dating for dummies, blah, 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 right? But, like, how about dating trans people for dummies? That doesn't exist.
So, this part.
Do you get nervous?
Yeah, why do you think I called you over? I've done this so many times, but, like, I'm already like,
it's gonna be totally chill.
Those are Kai and Jenna from episode one of this season of Are You the One? Kai, that must have been pretty dramatic. Granted, you knew that you were going to be bringing your testosterone shots with you to this house for the show, but still, opening up about that, that had to be a big decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was nerve-wracking, to say the very least. However, it's something that people don't see, and so I purposely chose to show that. I wanted people to see it. I wanted it to be normalized and say, oh, okay, this is a part of someone like this. This is their life. This is the whole thing. And part of the reason why I wanted to share it with someone who I had a relationship with is because I say, well, if you're going to like me, take all of me. This is everything that comes with it.
What made you decide to take part in this program?
You know, my biggest motivator, to be honest, is queer and trans visibility. I think that there's absolutely a lack of authentic visibility and representation within popular media. And I think that the more that these things are put into the popular space, that the more quote-unquote normal they seem to everybody else. It doesn't seem like such an othering or such a tokenizing subject for everyone.
Now, elaborate on that in terms of visibility. I think, you know, we have more visibility of LGBT people now in the media that doesn't come with a whole lot of, like, you know, judgmental baggage than we ever have. This year was the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall, so that got people thinking about a lot of things. There are more queer and trans and gender non-binary characters on TV. I'm openly gay. So there's more visibility now. What is this additional sort of visibility that you're referring to, this additional layer of visibility?
I guess you're right. There is a lot more visibility, but I think with this show in particular, and why I feel especially proud to be a part of it, is because it's showing authentic queer relationships as is. not as a one-off, not as a special episode, not tokenized in any way. You literally just have a house of people that all identify similarly, authentically exploring relationships and love, which is not something that anybody ever sees, especially on television. It's a very nuanced type of like social interaction that's a whole different world to people. I can't name a single place where I've ever seen it represented the way that it is here on this show.
And you said that you describe yourself as queer. What does that mean to you in terms of your sexual orientation?
Yeah, queer is one of those terms that is a little bit more loosely defined, so it depends on the person. But for me personally, it feels like an all-encompassing sexuality, aka a label to define that I can't really define it in the most layman's term.
Now, I don't want to be too blithe about this, and this is why I'm asking, because I think it's easy as we talk about sexual fluidity for someone who knows nothing about it and just kind of wants to get the question answered and move on to think that that means that, and I hate to be crass about this, but to basically mean that you will hook up with anybody, that there is no one who is off, you know what I'm saying? That there's no one who's off limits to you. Like, what what does it actually mean to you? What does that kind of fluidity really mean for you practically?
Well, I mean, it does mean that anybody is an option, right? But also, I do have taste. I do have standards. So that does not mean I'm going to go and hook up with everybody. It's the same thing as when I came out in high school, and I identified as female at the time, and I had girls that said, oh, don't get a crush on me. And I'm like, oh, girl, you're not even my type. Don't flatter yourself.
Now, there's the difference, Kai, between identifying, say, as queer or identifying as bisexual. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when we think of somebody as bi, that still kind of speaks to a binary continuum, that you are attracted to this or that, and not necessarily making room for people who don't fit neatly into the two ends of that continuum. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say. I think that there are some people that would feel differently. Some people do feel that bisexual does cover the gender gamut, and they have arguments for that. But I think that the general scope of understanding of bisexual, I mean, you have bisexual and you have binary, right? So it really does kind of get defined as only being attracted to males or females. And that's one of the reasons why I like the word queer and other words like pansexual and sexually fluid, because those tend to encompass more than just a binary gender spectrum.
Now, with regards to the show, are you the one, for those who haven't seen it, there are the singles who go to this beach house in Hawaii, and they have already been kind of analyzed. There's a psychographic profile that's been made of them to determine which of the other singles would theoretically be their perfect match. And if everyone finds the person that they have been kind of paired with, then everyone splits a prize of $1 million. So they kind of win the money or lose the money as a group. Everyone in the show has already disclosed, by their own admission, that they suck at relationships, and we know how dating shows go on MTV. So this is not going to be a PBS documentary about sexually fluid people. Were you concerned at all about MTV having a little bit too much fun with your relationship suckage as it relates to being on this show?
You know, I have my reservations 100%. However, I actually can't talk more highly of the crew that we had. It turns out that the production team was actually trained with GLAAD, and
GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. They're a media advocacy group that advocates for positive portrayals of LGBTQ people.
Yes, absolutely. That, and you also had a cast where all of us were the type of people that really held each other and the people that we were with responsible, and the production really knew what they had on their hands. So, was I afraid of being exploited? 100%. Have I already come off as quite dramatic in MTV style? Yes. But at the same time, I know what I signed up for, and also we were in good hands, and I think that one of the biggest difference watching our show as opposed to something else very similarly is that you're not only entertained, but you're also being educated, and there's a lot of real substance there. So that fear quickly dissipated.
Hey, Kai, we got a few questions. One question in particular from a listener who left a voicemail. I'm going to ask you to stay with us for just one more minute, and I want to give you a chance to answer Sasha's question. We'll continue with Kai West, a contestant from season 8 of MTV's Are You the One? We'll zoom out and look at reality TV and sexual and gender fluidity more broadly in just a minute. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for 1A and the following message come from the Platinum Card from American Express. Conversations and civil debate in our society push us forward and connect us with the rest of the world. With the Platinum Card, earn 5x membership rewards points on flights booked directly with airlines or with American Express Travel. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Don't live life without it. Visit americanexpress.com/exploreplatinum. Terms apply.
Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller isn't getting his wish. He's set to testify about his investigation into Russian interference and possible obstruction of justice by President Trump. Afterwards, the NPR Politics podcast is going to be there to break down everything you need to know about what he says.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing sexual and gender fluidity, partly as portrayed in season 8 of MTV's reality dating show, Are You the One? We're speaking to one of the contestants from this season, Kai West. We'll broaden out and talk about sexual and gender fluidity and reality TV more broadly. Kai, I know I got to let you go in a second, but we did get a voicemail from a listener with a question for you about the show. Here is what Sasha left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Sasha, and I'm calling from Washington, D.C., and my question is for Kai. My friends and I are a big fan of this season of Are You the One, and we're fascinated by the dynamics playing out on a reality show set up for straight people but with a queer cast. We've noticed that once contestants on the show couple up, there is an assumption of monogamy. But in so many queer communities, there is an exploration and celebration of alternative relationship structures and also having multiple partnerships. So in a season of Are You the One that's supposed to emphasize fluidity, why are so many contestants coupling up monogamously? And is this even the right strategy to win a game show where money is at stake?
Great question, Sasha. Kai, what would you say to Sasha?
Well, you know, I actually was the one person that was pinned as the open relationship guy. So I empathize with what Sasha is saying, and I think it's really interesting. Yes, does this show and cast run the gender and sexuality gamut 100%, but are we all people that have been brought up in a heterosexual society? Yes. So just because we identify that way doesn't mean that we've broken out of those patterns. My personal opinion, do I think that monogamy is the way to win the money for this show? No, but I don't think that all of my castmates would agree with me.
Kai, before I let you go, for someone else who is on a similar journey as you have been on, which you say in the show, you've gone through a lot of iterations of that, someone who is coming to understand the fluidity of their sexuality, of their gender, what would you say to them? Is there any advice you would give them?
To anybody who hear this, I wish someone had just told me you're perfect the way that you are. There's nothing wrong with you. It is okay to explore. We are all humans. We are on this planet for a very short time. So please, by all means, explore and talk about it. I think the more that you talk about it, the more you feel comfortable with yourself and the more other people feel comfortable and can support you in the way that you need.
Kai West, a contestant on season 8 of MTV's Are You the One? Kai, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's zoom out a bit and add two more voices to this conversation. Joining us now from NPR in New York is Pierre Dominguez, a culture writer for BuzzFeed News. Pierre, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And joining us in studio is Sherry Williams, a mass media and communications professor at American University. American University owns WAMU, which produces 1A. Professor Williams, welcome back.
Thank you.
Professor, I'd love to hear your reactions to what we just heard from Kai West. Anything stand out to you?
Well, I think something that Kai said that was really important is that even people who exist along the sexual identity and gender identity spectrum are still trying to unlearn some of these rules from heteropatriarchy that really don't serve any of us. And I think there's some good examples of that on this show, even though this is an MTV reality dating show and there are some traditional conventions of reality TV that feel exploitative and all that kind of stuff. But on there, we see that there are cast members like Bisit, who does not really fit into these binary ideas that we have about gender and about sexual identity. And people are able to learn from that. And even there's one character, cast member, Noor, who says that she's bisexual, but when it came down time for her to choose a mate, she ended up choosing a cisgender man because she said she went with what was safe and what felt comfortable. And she even, that's really an indication that even though she knows that it's okay to be attracted to a woman and have a relationship with a woman, she still needs to unlearn some of that too. So that is some of the value that I see in this show and also in some of the things that Kai was saying.
Worth noting, by the way, that Bisit and Noor are both from international, more conservative families. Bisit is Nigerian. Noor grew up in a traditional Jordanian Muslim household. Pierre Dominguez, what about you? Anything that we heard from Kai that stood out?
Well, I think one of the things that I guess I would like to bring into the conversation is this notion of reality TV being trashy or MTV, you know, being this corporate behemoth who's obviously trying to sort of have a show that's going to have high ratings. But I also think that, like, MTV has had a history starting with Pedro Zamora, who was a Latino AIDS activist who got on one of the early Real World episodes and was able to stage basically a gay wedding on television before it was even a political conversation point. So I guess I just wanted to start by saying that I think that the questions of the commercialization of queer identity and the idea that reality television is somehow illegitimate around those questions, I think it's almost the opposite. Reality television has been at the vanguard of a lot of these issues around race and gender and being on television.
Pierre, I also want to make sure before we go any deeper into the conversation that we're clear on some terminology. Amy tweeted, "Remember that sexual fluidity and gender fluidity are different things." Well said, Amy. Sexual orientation and gender identity are different. Sexual orientation has to do with who you see yourself with. Gender identity has to do with who you see yourself as. And we've also got this term sexually fluid. Pierre, would you add anything to what we've already discussed in terms of what we mean by sexual fluidity or gender fluidity?
I guess I would add that the way that trope usually gets played out on television is that there's usually sort of it kind of is very straight male gazy, and there will be like a very attractive woman, and sort of the question becomes, oh, is she into men or into women? And I think in a way that is often kind of structured around a straight male gaze. And I think what's so interesting about this show is that it really kind of pushed away from that trope of the way that sexual fluidity usually gets understood, right? Because these concepts are might be abstract, but they get played out in reality television in very particular ways. And I think what's important about the show is how it kind of moved away from the usual way that sexual fluidity gets represented on television.
With what Pierre was referencing with regards to these shows being viewed as trashy, Professor Williams, one of our listeners, Aubrey, had another word for it. Aubrey wrote on our Facebook page, "These shows are so skanky. It's nice that the market for them is expanding to be more inclusive, but this type of programming should have gone the way of the dinosaurs prior to even getting its start. Just smutty. It has an audience, though, I guess, so good that they'll be inclusive." Professor?
Well, I mean, I do agree that reality TV, even though it has been perceived as being lowbrow and dismissive, it is a place where we end up seeing not only queer people, but people of color represented in ways that we don't traditionally see them in scripted television. So when I think of where we see queer people of color the most, that is on reality television. And I know that, again, some people don't see that there is value in those shows, but there is value in the representations because we don't see those representations elsewhere. And I think of Love and Hip, the Love and Hip Hop franchise, for example. On Love and Hip Hop New York, there is a cast member on there, Jonathan, who is a Latino man who talks about going through conversion therapy, having his mother put him through conversion therapy. That's not anything that I've ever seen before in terms of a queer representation of a queer person of color who has experienced that. And that is on this show, on this franchise, that people easily dismiss. So I think there, we need to start taking these representations seriously, because we also need to really explore why we don't see those representations included in what we perceive as highbrow representations in media.
And when you say conversion therapy, you mean to convert someone away from being gay.
Right.
And I think it's also worth noting, Professor, that what's considered to be the first reality TV show aired on PBS. It was an American Family back in 1973, mm-hmm. where we learned about Lance Loud, mm-hmm. who was one of the first openly gay real people on television at all. So it may be skanky or smutty, but PBS proved that people will watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Pierre, you wrote an article for BuzzFeed News called MTV's New Dating Show Actually Gets Queer Dating. What did you mean by that?
I think I meant that a lot of the way that reality television has represented queer dating has often been as a kind of plot twist almost. So like shows like Tila Tequila, A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila, or Boy Meets Boy on Bravo, there was this idea that like sexuality was kind of like a thing that suddenly got revealed. And it was, again, it was designed for sort of straight audiences to kind of have a way into the show. They were not shows primarily about what queer dating looks like for queer people. And this show is really one of the first shows that I've seen that's not structured for a straight gaze. It's really about these sort of intricacies, these inner community, inner queer sort of intricacies about gender and desirability, and there's femme people and butch people, and there's every kind of gender, rather than these shows that usually have a main character that fits into idealized conventions of desire to kind of bring in straight viewers who will be not threatened by that.
Pierre, since you mentioned it, here is a clip from a promo for Boy Meets Boy. It was a reality dating show that aired on Bravo in the early 2000s. Here is part of how they promoted the show.
One exceptional gay man.
I want to make a huge attempt at finding a connection.
15 extraordinary suitors, all vying for his affection.
Everybody's out to get this perfect guy. That's definitely ingredients for a lot of drama.
There were things that he had heard that I hadn't heard. Two conflicting stories.
In the end, he must select just one man.
Will you stay?
I would love to.
But appearances aren't always what they seem.
You assumed I was gay. Why?
What neither the gay suitors nor the leading man know is that some of the suitors are straight men pretending to be gay.
I love you.
Competing to win a cash prize. Will the leading man discover their secret?
That's a clip from a promo for Boy Meets Boy. Professor, I'm having flashbacks. Like, I literally had, like, my stomach just went, oh, God, that is so problematic. But this is kind of where, this is where we've come from, to the point of Are You the One? So I guess remembering Boy Meets Boy when it came out, my, I think my barometer for what's skanky and smutty and trashy is maybe a little different, because I've seen what came before this.
Yeah, I mean, this, I remember this show. I remember when it came out, and it was problematic then, and it is now, because what this show does and what it did was it really trivialized and really made a mockery of same gender attraction, really just for the heterosexual gays. Because again, this isn't a show that was really and truly about helping a gay man find love. This was really a show that was really based on making a mockery of men who are attracted to men and who are seeking relationships with men. And also, just for the whole point of gaining a cash prize. So I think this, we really have come a long way when it comes to LGBT reality dating shows. And I think Boy Meets Boy shows that people are now taking the same gender attraction seriously on reality dating shows, even though reality dating shows themselves have some problematic aspects to them.
But I guess, Professor, that's the flip side of it, is, you know, to to have these shows, they have to recruit a cast. Right. I mean, nobody has been court ordered to be on MTV and take part in this show.
Right. Right. But I think it's what Kai was saying earlier in how important representation is. And even though knowing that, you know, reality shows have some traditional aspects to them that are built in to, you know, create drama, to exacerbate and cause drama, but also just having the representation of someone like Kai, of someone like Basit and some of the other cast members is really important, because I think of being a person who is of Generation X, of the original MTV generation. I mean, we barely even saw people of color at all represented on MTV, mm-hmm. let alone queer people of color. So mm-hmm. I think this representation on this show is groundbreaking and it is important. But it also is not meant to teach us everything we need to know about gender fluidity and sexual fluidity, but it is a gateway to people learning more.
Yeah, those of us who remember the very beginning of MTV remember when it was a rather monochromatic channel.
Absolutely.
So it's come a little ways. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. Stay close.
Support for NPR and the following message come from CarMax. For more than 25 years, CarMax has made it easy to sell your car. They provide free appraisals and offers on the spot. CarMax will buy your car even if you don't buy theirs. In fact, CarMax has bought more than 8 million vehicles. To learn more and schedule your free appraisal, visit CarMax.com.
Bitcoin needs a huge amount of electricity to power its computers. And that has created some very unique money-making opportunities in different parts of the world. It is also causing some governments concern. Listen and subscribe to The Indicator from NPR.
Let me get to some of your comments and peers. There are some very mixed perspectives on just the merits of having these kinds of stories on reality TV. Belinda wrote on our Facebook page, "Love this show. Why not? Just say love is love." Maria wrote on our Facebook page, "People who are sexual outsiders are not entertainment MTV. My sexual preferences are not a spectator sport." Queer Chocolatier, I love that Twitter name, Queer Chocolatier, tweeted, "Visibility and authenticity are incredibly meaningful in our society. Keep holding that space and telling your story." Pierre, how do you see this, the line between holding space for valuable stories and turning people into a spectator sport?
I think that, again, with what we just talked about regarding earlier shows like Boy Meets Boy or A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila, I think the what Kai brought up about the idea that GLAAD trained the media crew, the crew that was making Are You the One, I think that's really interesting. Because you can tell in the show and the way that the show is structured, again, I mentioned in my article, they're still to some degree playing into the trope of the idea that, oh, which gender is this person going to pick? As if that's like the most interesting question. And originally when I saw the ads for the show, I was like, oh God, this again. But actually when I watched the show, I realized that that's not the question that it's asking. It's really, about, how queer people are unlearning these sort of heteronormative patterns of desirability, of dating, that we are bombarded with from the time we are, like, you know, sentient. And the show, in sort of focusing on that question of unlearning, really is sort of an intra-queer show in a lot of ways. It's not for it's not exploiting in the way that viewer is framing the question, in my opinion.
Let me play another clip from Are You the One? This is a conversation between Kylie, who is a bisexual contestant who identifies as a woman, and Basit, who we mentioned earlier, who is a pansexual, non-binary contestant. Let's listen.
I have never dated somebody that is similar to you.
I would be shocked if you did.
Shut up.
I mean, who else is like me? Like,
hey, that's a fact, okay?
Being pansexual, I've stayed very guarded, because when a girl or a female identifying person finds out that you're attracted to other men, they immediately are like, that sounds like you're just gay, which is a tired idea. I do perform in drag.
Okay.
My drag name is Dion Slay.
Oh, Dion Slay!
She is a hoot and a holler, and she turns every party.
I can't wait to meet Dion Slay.
You may meet her soon.
I hope I do.
How do you feel about that? I feel like it's a vibe, for sure.
I like it. No, I like it. I really do. I'm very intrigued, and I've wanted something different, and this is that different, because I don't judge. I don't give a do whatever the you want.
That means a lot. That means a lot.
A clip with Kylie and Basit from Are You the One? And I think, Professor Williams, we may have made NPR history. I believe that's the first time anyone has said, oh, on NPR. So I believe this may be a moment. Note the date and the time. I think we have made history. Elliot emailed, I love the power of gender play, especially with the queer prom episode. Also, so much praise for Basit giving incredible non-binary representation. I've never seen myself represented on a dating show until Basit. I also think they've handled discussions of internalized biphobia in a frank and deeply personal way. Professor, there's also an aspect of this season of the show that deals with race as a constant in their identities, race and the cultures from which they hail. How do you see that playing out?
I see that they do and they don't deal with it, to be honest. So we know that Noor is a bisexual woman from Jordan, and her family is from a Muslim background. And she talks about wrestling with cultural ideas about and traditional ideas about gender and sexuality. And Basit, whose family's from West Africa, talks about that, too. I mean, so we see some of the cast members discuss that. But what I don't see is the show overall getting into that. And there are four episodes that we've seen so far, and I'm just really interested in how that will happen. Because one thing that I have noticed that I kind of have a raised eyebrow about is, even though there are like three or four cisgender Black women on there, they don't get very much camera time. And they don't really seem, other than Kylie, no one really seems to desire them or be interested in them very much. And along with Brandon, who is a cisgender bisexual Black man who is on the show, who is starting to, I think in the last episode, he started to vibe with somebody. But I think that's really interesting, too, because on these reality dating shows, we traditionally have not seen a lot of Black representation. And when we have seen it, it's been in a really traditional sort of way. And also in a heterosexual lens, too. So it's either been like this hypersexuality on A Love of Ray J and Real Chance of Love and Flavor of Love and all that kind of stuff. I'm wondering if because the people on this show don't really fit into these traditional ideas of sexual identity and gender identity, I'm not sure if that's why we're not seeing them represented as and focused on as much in this show yet. But again, we're only four episodes in, and I think it'll be interesting to see where the attention continues to ebb and flow on the show.
One more quick comment before we wind down. Sydney writes, I watched a lot of reality TV in middle school that was full of sexual chemistry and just plain sex between men and women. I can't express how much it would have helped me in navigating my sexual and gender identities to have seen this show at 12, which was how old I was when I came out. Is this season of Are You the One less destructive? I don't know, but it's representation, and young people can look to this show and see a future outside of struggle. Sherry, I wonder where you see this kind of representation going from here. When I was in my teens, all I had were the men on film from In Living Color to show me what a Black gay man was like, mm-hmm. which is why it took me so damn long to figure out who I am. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this kind of representation going, especially for people like our last listener who said, I wish I'd had this when I was 12?
I think this is really important because we know that media is a socialization tool, and media teaches us what is acceptable, what isn't, what is expected of us, and it also teaches us if different aspects of us will be accepted by society. And now that we have a lot more, and still not enough, a lot more representations of people with gender, with different gender and sexual identities being represented in society, that shows two things. Not only do these type of people exist, because when we don't see them, and there's this media term called symbolic annihilation, when we don't see people with power represented in media, and that just gives off the idea that they don't exist and they don't have power in society. But when we start to see people more, we start to not only show that they do exist, that they are important and an important part of society, and that they deserve to exist in the way that is authentic and comfortable for them.
And before we go, Pierre, where do you see this going? One of our listeners mentioned Pose on FX another form of representation. Before we go, Pierre, where do you see this going?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I just think that this is a great—I also wish I had had this growing up. I mean, I'm a gay Latino man from Colombia with its own issues around gender and gender dissidence. And I think that it's really important to see these representations of those of us who are, like, who are not represented in mainstream media as sort of desirable or as sort of— you know, having fun. I mean, there's an element of joy and fun to these shows that is really important. And I think it really shows where things have moved into. I think it's great.
Pierre Dominguez, a culture writer for BuzzFeed News, and Professor Sherry Williams of American University, thank you both for being with us. This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and edited by Orion Donovan Smith. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.